Feedback resilience is a superpower. So let's talk about what it is and how you can improve your resilience right away. Hey, everybody. Welcome back. I hope that y'all had a great weekend. I hope that you're having an amazing start to your week. This week, I am bringing you part one of two episodes on feedback resilience. When I sat down and looked at what I wanted to talk about for today, I realized that I have a lot to say on feedback and specifically on building feedback resilience. So I'm going to make this two episodes. I want to make sure that the content I'm giving you is not oversimplified. I want to make sure that it's nuanced enough to really give you effective strategies at helping you to apply these things to your day-to-day life at work. So let's start by just talking about what feedback resilience is. This is just something I termed. I'm sure that someone else has said it or said it in a similar way. I'm not here to reinvent the wheel, but combining feedback and resilience for me and my brain was a really helpful way for me to be able to talk to my clients about this and help them move forward. Feedback resilience is when you are easily able to take in critical and constructive feedback. You're able to take it in without defensiveness, without overpersonalizing it, and without getting stuck in shame or feeling like a failure, feeling like you've let yourself down in some way, but instead you're able to take in that feedback, see where it's helpful, and quickly apply it. So that's what I mean when I'm talking about feedback resilience. Some of you may find that as you have shifted into this new job, this new role, that you are finding you have a ton of feedback fear. Some of you may have carried that feedback fear throughout your whole career. You've always had feedback fear. You've been a mess before any performance evaluation. You were always worried about what your supervisor was thinking. Many of you may have found that if you were in your previous role for quite a while, you got fairly comfortable and acclimated to the feedback culture. You kind of knew what was coming. You understood where you stood with your supervisor. You knew what to expect in terms of performance reviews. So you may be feeling pretty jarred by suddenly being in something new and finding yourself really fearful of feedback. So it's very common when you get into something new to have a lot of feedback fear. Your expectations for, you know, what type of feedback people are going to give you, it's cloudy. We're not quite sure. What are the expectations here? How do I compare to other people? How positive or negative is my supervisor going to be? So all of that uncertainty, of course, will send the brain into an absolute panic. So some of what's happening is just that you don't know exactly what to expect. And so you start to panic and you start to feel like you either want to avoid feedback or you want to control everything so that you can ensure that you are only getting positive feedback. I call it like thirsty for encouragement. Sometimes when we get into these places and we're feeling unsure and we're kind of maybe questioning capabilities or competencies, feeling some insecurity, we'll start to get really hungry for positive feedback. And we just want like constant encouragement. And what happens is the brain thinks if I can get a bunch of positive feedback and get a lot of encouragement, this anxiety is going to go away. And this is partly where the thought error happens. What tends to happen if you just get that short-term fix of getting your attaboy and someone telling you, oh, you're doing such a good job, and you get that encouragement, it's kind of like a drug. You get the hit, you feel better, then you find yourself panicked 3 days later, a week later, oh my gosh, I'm not going to be able to maintain a good performance. Like say your supervisor tells you you're doing a great job, you're really fitting in here, we're happy that we brought you in. You have a whole day, a whole couple of days where you're like, I feel so good, I'm on top of the world. And then it wears off like a drug. And suddenly you start to panic, oh my gosh, what if they find out I really can't do it? What if I can't maintain that? Or your brain will find ways, like we talked about in the previous episode, to dismiss that feedback. They're just being nice, they don't want to be hard on me yet, etc. So what you actually need to decrease your anxiety, to feel calm, to perform well, is not to get a bunch of positive feedback. What you need is to get resilient in receiving all feedback. Resilient, open, even seeking out all feedback. Constructive, critical feedback, ways that you can improve, things that you're doing that have messed up or need to be shifted. So the first thing I want you to really challenge your own thinking on is that an attempt to avoid negative feedback will not make you feel better in the long term. It will make you feel more fragile because you're constantly sending a message to your brain that you cannot handle real feedback. You can't handle constructive criticism. And so you're constantly then trying to squeeze at everything to make sure that nobody ever tells you anything negative. And what we actually want is for you to feel anti-fragile. We want you to feel resilient. We want you to feel like it's fine. I'm completely comfortable and open to getting feedback on all the ways I can improve, on anything that needs to be shifting, on anything that is not up to par. And I think about this like the Olympics. I always think about like an extreme version of feedback. If I'm training for the Olympics and I have a coach who gives me tons of feedback and they tell me exactly what I need to work on each time I do a sprint, I am not going to be someone who crumbles every time they give me feedback, right? So like I sprint and my coach tells me, you did these three things wrong at the start, your stride was too short. Likely, I'm not going to be somebody that then immediately crumbles, panics, pushes back on that feedback. I'm really used to that feedback. I'm resilient. I've gotten lots of feedback. I'm going to be able to take it in, apply it, and move forward because I want to win. And so I want you to think about your career in the same way. You want to win, right? Whatever that looks like for you. So you want to increase your feedback resilience. You want to increase your ability to take in negative feedback, constructive feedback, critical feedback. You don't want to spend your career running from it or only getting positive feedback and never really showing yourself that you are fully capable of handling feedback that may not feel 100% ideal. So I'm going to tell you my first strategy for how you can help your brain feel more open to getting this feedback, help your brain to not feel so defensive, resistant, and panicked, which is what happens particularly when we're feeling insecure. We tend to fall into this place where immediately we feel defensive. So here's strategy number one. I want you to separate. This is the concept that I learned from Stacey Bayman, and she applies this to business. I'm going to give her credit for that. I'm going to apply it to the professional space. I want you to separate your human value with your professional value. Your human value from your professional value. When you conflate human value, worthiness, lovability with your professional value, you're going to avoid feedback. You're going to crumble when someone tells you you need to improve. You're going to view your worthiness as decreasing anytime you're getting critical feedback on your professional skills, your professional knowledge, your performance in any way. So being able to separate your human value from your professional value really empowers you to be able to be more objective about your professional skills, knowledge, performance, and it helps you to improve those and grow those. So let me break this down a little bit more. There are different philosophies or different ways that people sort of talk about human value. You can pick whatever resonates with you, but the bottom line is this. Your human worthiness, when you are born, when we look at an itty-bitty baby, the value in that itty-bitty baby is inherent, okay? That baby is born deserving to be loved, to have safety, to have community, to have their basic needs met. It just is. It exists, right? Some of you will attribute this with God or a higher power, right? That gives you inherent worth. Whatever your belief system, most of us will agree, we're not going to look at a teeny tiny baby and think to ourselves, well, you're valuable so long as you have the right job, you have the right professional skills, you have the right knowledge base. Right? We're not going to do that. We're going to look at that itty bitty baby and see them as a human who is worthy and valuable just because they were born. So I want you to see your human value and your worthiness as one column separate from your professional value. And this is really important because we have all kinds of wounds from our lives that will mess with our sense of worthiness, our sense of enoughness, our sense of feeling like we're valuable as a human, feeling like we deserve love, feeling like we deserve community. All of those things can be affected by lots of different psychological experiences we have growing up. And I want you to not have to feel like you're taking all of that into your workspace, that you're showing up to work trying to heal that stuff within the work environment in a place where you are really exchanging your value for money. You are bringing a skill, they are paying you money. This is not the most ideal place to take those wounds, because what ends up happening is everything then becomes really personalized. Everything feels like it's offensive, or it's really hurting you to the core. And we don't want that happening, because then you can't move through the workplace in a way that feels empowering for you. So human value is one column, okay? I want you to put that on one side of the paper, see that as separate from your professional value. Your professional value, I define, there's different ways you could look at this, but the simple way for me to understand professional value is your skills plus your knowledge base in a particular area. Maybe you're skilled as a financial accountant. Maybe you have worked a bunch in the real estate industry. Whatever it is, and some of you have a particular area that your skills are attached to, some of you do not. So your professional value, it's just your skills, soft skills and hard skills, and your knowledge base. When you separate your professional value from your human value, you're able to be very objective about your professional value. When you separate these two things, you will start to desire feedback so you can increase your professional value. Because the more you increase your professional value, the more empowered you are. It just means that your skills are more refined, your expertise are more refined, you might have like expanded your knowledge of an industry, be able to work in multiple environments, all of it. So professional value is determined by how valuable your skills and knowledge base are to a company or an organization in a specific role. And these things are often influenced by like market values, by, you know, how in demand something is, or if the market gets saturated with a particular job industry. Here's the most important thing that I want you to see. You're not being paid for your human worthiness. You are being paid for skills and knowledge. That's it. You're not getting paid because you're worthy. That's why when people are like, I'm worth more, when they're negotiating for their money, it starts to feel really messy. You want to negotiate from a space of your skills and your knowledge. You are already worthy. You can't get paid enough money to equal your worthiness. You can get paid based on your skills and your knowledge base. Here's what else I think is really important for you to understand. Your professional value will change frequently throughout your career. It changes when we shift roles. It can change when the cultural environment changes in our organization. It can change when we shift industries. Constantly evolving. It's constantly growing. So I want to break down two examples because I think it can be helpful to see these things outside of yourself, where it's much easier to see it objectively than it is when it's happening to us. So let's look at Bob. Bob works in sales, and he's currently working in sales for a commercial real estate industry. He, at this stage, has been working in this for a while. He has a high value in the industry because he has a large knowledge base of commercial real estate. So his knowledge base is strong. He is very skilled at sales. So his sales skills are really strong. So Bob is feeling like his professional value in this place, in this company, is very high. And then he gets promoted. And let's say that Bob gets promoted to a project management role, that an opportunity for project management comes up, they bump him into this position. And now his sales skill, while something that is transferable, that he might be applying some to maybe persuading teams, getting buy-in, but overall his sales skill is just less valuable in this setting because it's not a sales-focused position. He still has a really strong knowledge base of the commercial real estate industry, so he has high value in this, but there is lots of room for Bob to now increase his professional value in this setting by growing several skills, some of his logistical skills, maybe it's his team management skills. And one of the fastest ways Bob's going to do that is when he gets feedback, he's able to take it in and he's able to apply it quickly. So when he's getting feedback on how he's doing with his logistical skills, with his team management skills, what he needs to be doing differently, what he can be improving, what he's applying well, what he's not applying well, okay? Now, listen, if you're in an industry where you're not getting a lot of feedback, I don't want you to use that against yourself. I'm going to talk about that in the next episode. Don't start to panic and think you can't improve without it. You can, because you're able to see areas for your own improvement when you're in this mindset. So whether or not someone's giving you that direct feedback or not, when you really separate out your human value versus your professional value, things become a lot more objective and you're able to really see areas where you can continue to improve and grow. The key is this: skills and knowledge are not fixed. They're very fluid. You always want to be seeking ways to increase your professional value. It's always to your benefit to do that. And feedback is such a great way to improve that. You could even think about taking in feedback in and of itself as a skill. So the ability to do that, to be able to take in feedback, to be able to apply it to your life without feeling defensive and really being able to utilize it for your own growth is actually a skill that will improve your overall professional value. I want to give you another example because I see this happening to clients all the time. Sally is the director of finance. She is working for the auto industry and she's been in this job for 15 years. So she has a lot of experience with the auto industry and she is highly skilled in finance. She, at the end of her job in the auto industry, she has a very high professional value in her skills and in her knowledge of the industry. She decides to take a job opportunity for a bigger company as a director of finance, but this job is in the apparel industry. So now she's switching industries. It's a better opportunity. It's more money. She goes in. She's still highly skilled in finance. She's an expert in finance. But now her knowledge of the industry is much lower than her knowledge was of the industry that she was in previously. Her auto knowledge was higher than her apparel knowledge. She's going to have a learning curve, right? People will often make this a problem. They will often start to panic about it. But all this is an opportunity for her to increase her professional value in this setting, and she's going to do that by closing the gap on her learning curve. The more feedback she gets, the more open she is to being able to see her own areas for improvement, her own areas where she can learn, the faster she's going to close that gap. This is why I want you to start to view feedback as 100% helpful for you in increasing your overall value. It actually just helps you improve your skills and improve your knowledge. So the more Sally is able to take in the feedback, literal feedback from the people who give it to her, plus her own feedback as she observes her skills and her knowledge base, the faster she's going to increase her industry knowledge. Her finance skills will become even more nuanced because now she's able to apply those finance skills to two very large industries and her professional value increases. So what I want you to be able to see here is that growth requires that we accept there are areas to improve and we are open to that feedback. Okay? Growth requires that you accept there are areas where you can improve and you are open to that feedback. So it's always to your benefit to increase your professional value in whatever setting you're in. And you can probably see how you can increase that, whether it's really increasing your expertise, increasing some specific skills, whether it's growing your knowledge base of a particular industry, growing your knowledge base around the company you're working in, the culture, the teams, the way that they function, their systems, all of it. A lot of times people start to view, you know, this new space as threatening in some way because you haven't mastered all the things. But what you're really doing is just increasing your professional value. So I want to give you an exercise for how you can apply this breakdown of human value versus professional value right now to the job that you're in to help you feel less threatened by feedback in general. I want you to lay out your professional value currently as you see it. So I want you to list out all of your skills, soft skills, and hard skills. And do not leave out the soft skills. My clients do this all the time. If you have strong communication skills, relationship building, networking, whatever those are, they are just as important and just as essential and oftentimes more valuable in particular roles. They are very, very high value skills in particular roles. So I do not want you to leave those out. I want you to list all of those on a piece of paper. And then next to that, I want you to list, if applicable, any knowledge base that you have of an industry, of some sort of context, of systems, whatever it is. And I want you to look at, outside of yourself, your, quote, professional value in this role. You're looking at all of your skills, your hard skills, your soft skills. You're looking at your knowledge base, your understanding of the context, the industry. And then I want you to answer the question, do you seek to increase your professional value? Knowing that increasing your professional value gives you oftentimes more money, oftentimes more choices, oftentimes more autonomy. So if your answer is yes, I want to increase my professional value, then you need to commit to receiving feedback on all of the skills that you've listed, all of the knowledge base and context that you've listed. And what happens when we do this is that you are opting in to the feedback, which is very empowering for your brain. So instead of feeling like I'm going to have to get this feedback, I need to, you know, try to avoid getting this feedback, I'm terrified of getting this feedback, you're looking at all these skills and you're saying, yes, I want feedback on my sales skills, on my team management, on my knowledge of the apparel industry. I want feedback on all of this so that I can improve my professional value, grow my skills, grow my knowledge base, and have even more autonomy, money, freedom as I move forward in my career. It really can help your brain feel less like it's being forced into some kind of threatening feedback and instead see it as, this is absolutely necessary for me to continue to grow and for me to be even more empowered in this position. So that's the first strategy I want you to use, separating that human versus professional value, letting it be fine that you have a professional value in the workplace. You do. You're paid money for something. But it's no different than like any other skill, than riding a bike. No one's going to look at the kid and say, hey, there's room for improvement in riding your bike, so you're not worthy anymore, right? Like, nobody looks at the kid and thinks you're not worthy as a human. We see their skill at riding a bike. It's just a skill, and skills change, improve, grow, shift, just like they're going to do throughout your entire career in whatever professional industry that you are in. I'm going to come back next week and talk to you a little bit more about how to deal with that fight or flight that kicks in when you're getting that feedback, how to parse through when it's helpful and when it's not, and some other tips for really building your feedback resilience. But this is your first piece of homework, really applying this professional value chart, looking at it, breaking it down, and opting in to increasing your professional value by being open to getting feedback in all of these areas. If you are feeling like you are struggling with feedback resilience, struggling with all the things that I've been talking about in this podcast, it can be hard to move through some of this on our own. It can be hard to see where our own blocks are. It can be hard to see all the brain tricks that your brain is doing that is keeping you stuck. Hop over erinmfoley.com, check out my one-on-one coaching, grab a consultation. I will be back next week for part 2 of Feedback Resilience. In the meantime, I hope you all have a great week.